Good morning. We are reading 100 passages from the Old and New Testament, which takes us from the beginning to the end of the Bible. Today we start Act 3 of God's plan to bless all the peoples of the earth. We've read about the creation, which was very good, and the rebellion against God, which brought sin and evil into the world. Now we begin a long act, which after many ups and downs, leads to the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. This act begins with a journey. That journey is first a journey God calls one man to make. Initially, it is a physical journey from Ur of the Chaldeans in Mesopotamia to Haran, and then into the land of promise around Hebron and Shechem, in what became the homeland of Jesus Christ. However, this journey was more than a physical journey. It was also a spiritual journey for Abraham, as he grew in knowledge of God, his purposes, and his promises. As we read this week's chapters, we find that it is also the journey of the whole of mankind, and our personal journey too. Each of us here is making these two journeys, which means we can learn much from reading about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Today, Fred begins another stage on his journey as his parents, Fran and Noel, bring him for his baptism. We welcome them. Let us look now at God's promise and his purpose. He tells Abraham in our reading that his purpose is to bless all people. We know that blessing comes through Jesus Christ becoming man, born at a definite time and place in history, into a family and people. The call of Abraham was the start of that plan. Abraham lived in a land where idols of wood and stone were worshipped, and he had to leave that behind. His call was to found a new people, a people who would live in a land where the true God was worshipped, so that when God's Son walked this earth as a child, he would be brought up amidst a people who knew their God and worshipped him in the temple at Jerusalem. To make this happen was an impossible task for any human being. That is the reason what happened is based on God's promise and worked out by God's promise and provision. Yet God, in his love, seeks to bring it all about through ordinary and sinful people. God's promises are not empty promises, as we often experience in life, when we hear the cynical cry, "Promises, promises, promises." When God said to Abraham, "I will make you a great nation, and all peoples will be blessed through you," he meant he, God, would do it. This in chapter 12 is a promise by the one true God whose purposes never fail. Abraham's life is a call to us to come out from vain and empty worldly living, where we put our trust in ourselves, other humans and things, into a living relationship with the living God who always keeps his promises. Let's look at Abraham's life with God now. First, there was a call to leave Ur, and the family set out, but they stopped at Haran. And it was not until after his father died and the voice of God was clear in this promise in Genesis 12, that Abraham set out with Sarah and Lot, his nephew, to obey. He had heard, and he is willing to obey, but he is immature. At this stage, he is still called by his old name, Abram, which means exalted father. Only later in Genesis 17 does God say, I am God Almighty, walk before me and be blameless. I will confirm my covenant between me and you and greatly increase your numbers. At this stage, God changed Abram's name to Abraham, meaning father of many as the stars of heaven. Glancing back at the chapters between 12 and 17, we can see that there have been many ups and downs in Abraham's life to bring him to this point. There'd been a famine in the land, and Abraham had decided to go to Egypt. Fearing for his life, he had lied that Sarah was his sister, and it was Pharaoh who sent him back to the land of promise. Abraham does not appear to have consulted God at all. Then there are the chapters revealing how Lot, because of his attachment to Abraham, caused many problems. First, they separated because of quarrelling between their herdsmen, with Lot choosing the fertile Jordan plain. And then Lot was taken prisoner, so Abraham had to go to war to rescue him. What a big distraction Lot was. But God did not let go of Abraham. And it was as he was returning from that battle, he met Melchizedek, the king of Salem or Jerusalem, who brought out bread and wine, an event taken by the New Testament writer to the Hebrews to foreshow the priesthood of Jesus Christ, which is remembered in our communion services. Even in his distraction with Lot, God was working and revealing his plan to Abraham. Perhaps we're beginning to see reflections in our own spiritual journey. When we go ahead and do things without asking God, we get tangled up in diversions, and yet God keeps speaking to us, and suddenly we see or understand more, because God keeps his promises. Let's go back now to the fundamental promise. Abraham is in the land. He does not own any of it, for when Sarah died, he had to purchase a small piece of land to bury her. He is promised to be the father of a great people, but his wife is barren. Where is God? What about this promise? I read this morning these words of Oswald Chambers. If our hopes are being disappointed just now, it means that they are being purified by God. One of the greatest strains in life is the strain of waiting for God. Abraham buckled under that strain and consulted his wife, not God. When the years went by and they had no child, to make him the father of many. You can imagine them saying to each other, what are we going to do? It was Sarah who came up with the idea that Abraham could have a child by her maid Hagar. Abraham went along with this idea, echoing Adam's decision in Eden to listen to Eve, and Ishmael was born. Abraham loved him, and God did too, but his birth caused a lot of trouble. He was not the child of promise. Abraham had to learn a deeper lesson about God's promises. God is the origin of the promise, and God will fulfill it, not us. Our role is faith in a sovereign God who keeps his promise. God speaks again in chapter 15. Do not be afraid, Abram, I am your shield, your very great reward. Abraham believed God, and it was counted to him as righteousness. He took the step of faith. We don't have to do the impossible ourselves, but we do have to put our trust in God, which trust or faith is a gift from God. Despite his faithfulness in conceiving Ishmael, that righteousness stood the test, and it did not alter his spiritual standing with God, because his standing remains the same once he made that step of faith, like ours is not altered once we've come to a personal faith in what Jesus Christ has done for us. As Jesus said, I will never leave you or forsake you. When God fulfilled his promise to make Abraham a father, Sarah was 90 and Abraham nearly 100. Naturally, it was impossible for them to have a child. Abraham was as good as dead, according to the assessment of St. Paul. And that is the point. Abraham could do nothing, but God could and did. When the time came, and only faith remained. Isaac, or laughter, the child of promise, was born. You might think this is the end, but no, there is one final test. In chapter 22, we are told God instructed Abraham to take Isaac, the child of promise, and sacrifice him. It was a place specially chosen on Mount Moriah, near the site where Jerusalem now stands. It's important here not to exclaim in horror at this command, but to be attentive to what God's purpose was in giving this instruction. As we read and ponder, we in fact see a foreshadowing of the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. When father and son leave the servants, the wood for the fire is laid on the back of Isaac, who accepts it meekly. When he asks his father, "Where is the lamb for the sacrifice?" Abraham replied, "God will provide a sacrifice, my son." Can you see the faith and obedience of that man who trusted and obeyed God, not knowing what would occur? Can you see the son Isaac carrying the wood as Jesus would carry the cross? Abraham had reached a point in his journey when his relationship with God came first, and he was ready to obey to the point of giving up the promised son. With Isaac on the altar, ready to be slain, there was divine intervention, and God spoke, "I swear by myself that because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your only son, I will bless you and make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as the sand on the seashore. And through your offspring, all nations on earth will be blessed because you obeyed me." Can you hear the echoes of the life of Jesus and the ultimate fulfillment of the promise in him? It was he who was obedient unto death. It was he who was raised to life. Abraham was led on his journey to experience for himself the very obedience and self-offering of Christ. It is an experience in humility we can enter into when we are ready to give up our best for God's very best. It is a wonderful account then of one man's journey with God. He was an ordinary man and he stumbled several times. He forgot God. He left the land, not once but twice. He did not wait for God to fulfill his promise, but tried to do it himself. all serious stumbles, but God never forsook him. On our journey, we may look back on or encounter similar situations, and that's why it is good to read about this life, lived thousands of years ago, but written down to help us live, trusting God too. This week, we will go on to read of the two sons of Isaac and the 12 sons of Jacob, and how famine drove them to Egypt. They too went astray from the living God. But you will also read about Jacob's wonderful encounter with God, to show in the three different lives of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob that we can always trust God to never leave us and to be true to his promises as we put our faith in him. In next week's sermon, we will hear about the special life of Joseph.